Be Irulao. Watch your back, watch your back. A chance is gonna get you. Watch your back, watch your back. A chance is gonna get you. Watch your back, watch your back.
Oh, there's a giant here. It's a coming from the Angelaria. Gotta wash those red hands. It's the crimes of the Badlands. It's the crimes of the Badlands.
Hi, Douglas.
Hi, Julie. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Not bad. Thank you. Pretty chill. Pretty chill. Didn't go out last night too much.
Yep. Oh, I didn't.
No, just a few drinks.
Oh, you surfing. Went out. Okay.
No, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't go out.
You
last
didn't.
Night.
Okay, no. So you're fresh.
Well, fresh.
Cheers.
Yeah, we're already drinking. So.
We are. I already opened my beer. Today it's a German one. Steam brew. It looks very cute. It's a kind of a commercially tasting. It's a. It's a cheap one from Lidl, so
you can tell. And hence the German link, right?
I didn't even realize until now. And you're having a kava?
I'm having kava because it has to do with our story today. Shall we tell people what our podcast is about?
Just in case people are starting to listen.
Like
true crime.
Listener number 16.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more like 25 or something, but still.
I know, I like to exaggerate.
But this is a good occasion to remind our listeners that if you just tell one friend that likes crime, that,
if you like it, tell a friend.
Yeah. It would really help us out.
And it also helps us to rate and review.
Of course.
But, no stress.
No.
No pressure.
And as the name of the podcast says, that's usually connected to the Basque Country somehow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have very, it could be a tenuous link, is what our story today has a tenuous link.
Okay.
Douglas looks
I need a link.
Skeptical about my ability to link this. Yeah.
Let's see.
Like, this story is funny because this story is out of Catalonia.
Okay.
Or Catalonia.
Mm-hmm.
Lonia, I think is in English, right?
Yeah, Catalonia. I would say Catalonia, yeah.
But my friend Sergio, Goyo's partner.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Goyo. Hi, Sergio. Well, Goyo will listen, and then he'll tell Sergio that we gave him a shout out.
Right.
Sergio actually recommended it to me, and said this story is crazy. If you can find a Basque link, that would be awesome. So... And when I read about the story, I was like, oh my God, that is crazy. So I thought, I gotta find this Basque link.
That's cool.
And I did.
Nice.
I succeeded.
Okay.
So, so it is Catalonia. And as we were saying, we're drinking kava because kava is from Catalonia.
Yeah.
And so that's why I thought, okay, we'll get a Catalonian drink today.
It's nice. Or Catalan.
Catalan, yeah. I also think, Catalonia is it's not similar to the Basque Country, but it has,
many similarities.
Some, similarities, and it's, as an autonomous region, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think from the outside, we kind of hear Spain, and we always expect it to be, a country. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the UK or England, people.
Right, the UK,
Confused. Like, France is a classic example. One country, nothing weird.
Right, Germany.
Yeah.
Although there was East and West Germany.
Germany, though, is federal. Which I think makes a very big difference. When it's a federation, you see a lot more distinctiveness amongst the states.
Okay.
And I think you can see that in America as well. It's more kind of like a federation.
Right.
And so, Germany does have these differences. But Spain is much more like England and Scotland and
Ireland
and Wales and, et cetera. I'm forgetting one. Cornwall.
Is that a secret?
Isle of Man. Well, they're all a little different, communities. Like, Cornwall has no autonomy, no devolution, no power. But they're, culturally different people.
They have their own dialect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, different Celtic language.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that way, the Basque Country is one of the most autonomous regions in Europe. It has the most powers, like it collects taxes and has power over...
Has own education system, medicine, healthcare system.
Policing, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Catalan, in this context, is a different independent region within Spain. But it has way less powers than the Basque Country, so it can't raise taxes.
Mm-hmm.
It does have its own police force, although I don't know if it's national. I think it is.
Hmm.
The Mossos de Escuadra is their name.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be the equivalent of their Ertzaintza here.
Uh-huh.
Which, if you're a listener of the podcast, you know about the Ertzaintza.
That's the Basque police force, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it is a little bit less autonomous, but they speak Catalan, which mm-hmm. is a language more closely related to French than to Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
You could say Spanish and Portuguese are more closely related, whereas Catalan and French are similarly related. So, you know, they have that distinctiveness. Their language is different. They actually have much higher levels of speaking Catalan natively than here in the Basque Country. The numbers here, about a third of people speak Basque,
mm-hmm.
whether natively or learnt. I don't know what the numbers are in Catalonia, but I would expect it to be about 70, maybe 80% of people can speak Catalan or use it day to day. So it's quite a different situation. The exception is more like Barcelona, which is a big, mostly, I think, Spanish-speaking.
Like a lot of big cities, and it's a big tourist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of English, a lot of Romanian, a lot of Polish, a lot of Ukrainian, lots of languages. I think that's a little quick intro, just to have an idea. Yeah. There's other
and
regions.
And they would like to be independent as well.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of different
they're
moves,
in the news right now for that.
Moves to become independent, mm-hmm. as have the Basque Country, you know. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. in that sense, I find them more similar than other regions.
There are parallels, but it's also very mismatched. So, for example, they haven't really had any armed revolt like ETA was an armed movement in the Basque Country, whereas they didn't really have that in the last, you know, since the dictatorship. Historically, they've fought for independence like the Basque Country, but recently, no. And so that makes quite a big difference kind of in today's politics, I think. So we've always been mismatched, but similar stories.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the eternal struggle, you know, the central government always divides to conquer, right? So in a way, the Basque Country is always played against Catalonia. Catalonia, you know, is also played against the Basque Country to try and keep us divided. And so it's interesting for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the more you learn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Douglas, for that.
My pleasure.
I figured you would be able to explain it better than I would, so thank you. And I got a lot of explaining to do in the next hour or so. only disclaimers I would say for would be that there's mention of suicide and sexual assault.
Okay.
And this will probably be, it's not that very big in the story. So.
Okay.
It's not like the story's all about that.
Almost mom safe.
I guess. I mean, there is murder.
Sure.
Warned. It is a crime podcast. So.
Yes, it is.
So my one sentence synopsis of this story is, the journalistic prowess of a young woman assists police in solving her own death.
Oh, her own death. Oh my gosh.
On December 2nd, 2001, in the town of Sabadell, a small city of about 200,000 residents just outside of Barcelona, like 27 kilometers away, a neighbor awakes at 4:45 a.m. to a loud crashing noise coming from the interior patio of their apartment block. The buildings that surround the interior patio face two different streets. On one side, Güell y Ferrer Street, and on the other, 48 Calvet de Estrella Street. After hearing the sound, the neighbor looks at the time and goes back to sleep. Later that morning, around 9, another neighbor looks out into the interior patio and sees the almost naked body of a young woman crumpled on the ground. They call the police. The police arrive to start processing the scene. They find several clothespins nearby and surmise that the woman must have fallen from above, crashing into the many clothes hangers which hang from the windows of the neighbors' homes on her way down. They have to ask themselves, was this a suicide? Mm. Her head and face appeared to have taken the brunt of the fall, making her unrecognizable.
Oh, man.
I know. Terrible. She was clothed in only her bra and underwear, which appeared to have been burned, as did her skin and her hair.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. She had other injuries on her body not associated with the fall. There were no identifying markers to tell them who this woman was, and they assumed this Jane Doe must have come from one of the surrounding buildings. So in the articles that I read, they called it an NN.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that is? For Jane Doe, like non... Like, what do you think
no
that
name?
Means?
No name? NN?
No name, maybe, yeah.
But that would be sin nombre in Castilian. But
that's true.
So, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I can search, but...
I thought we could speculate without me having to go down that rabbit hole I was writing. I didn't have time, Douglas, to look into it.
Nomen nescio.
What is that?
It's Latin for unknown name.
Okay, there we go. Good, good call. You did it. You nailed it. So they begin their canvassing of the area, going door to door to inquire if anyone matching the description of the young woman resided in the buildings. Atop the building at 48 Calvet de Estrella, police discover the spot where the woman began her descent. On the rooftop terrace, they find a set of clothes, some hair, and some matches.
Oh.
They did not find any identifying documents with the clothing, so her identity remained a mystery. They focused their search on that building. As they did so, they were able to make contact with each of the residents to find that nobody was missing from their household that matched the description of the young woman. A woman in her 20s to early 30s with dark hair. At one residence, they couldn't get an answer. When they inquired with the neighbors as to who lived on the third floor at apartment 2, they were informed that it was a young woman in her 20s to 30s with dark hair.
Mm-hmm.
They now wondered if they had found their suicide victim. Until she could be reached, they continued with their investigation. At the preliminary autopsy, the victim was found to have an enormous amount of benzodiazepines. Oh, God. Benzodiazepines. In English, no?
Diazepines.
Diazepines. You're right. Diazepines. Of
Your
course,
mom's like,
benzodiazepines.
Ah!
I know. My mom's listening and be like, Julie, have I taught you nothing? Benzodiazepines. No.
Sounds like
Did
it.
I say it wrong?
No. I think
benzodiazepines.
I think
you're
like, good.
Okay. So she had an enormous amount of benzodiazepines from the following medications. Tranquimazine, Dormicum, Loramet, Nocamil, and Aldosomil. So the amount found in her body was 35 times higher than the normal dose for these sleeping aids.
Okay.
She also had trace amounts of caffeine and alcohol in her.
Mm.
Her ankles bore marks that they speculated could be a sign of having been bound.
Right.
On her bra and underwear, and on her fingertips, they found what appeared to be some kind of perfume or cologne, which they determined was used as an accelerant to start the fire that had caused her burns.
So many weird things. Mm-hmm. Like, usually by now, we kind of get an idea of what's happening, but I'm very lost.
It's good. That's the point.
All the listeners are with me. Well, maybe a couple. Maybe your mom knows where it's going. She's like, I've seen plenty of those.
I don't think so.
We'll discover.
She was a surgical nurse in her final year, so no, she just did routine.
Okay, well,
you
never
know, outpatient surgery.
No.
But anyway, so in her vagina, they found a white liquid that could not be identified.
Well.
So, yeah.
okay.
You'd think that would be the first thing they'd come to, you know, think it was.
Guess all the policemen were straight.
Could this be? okay. So her cause of death was determined to be from the impact of, from the fall off the fourth story of the building where her clothes were discovered. So I always want to clarify that when they say fourth story here, in American,
it would be fifth.
It would be fifth. Because they never count the bottom floor because it's like the entryway.
Yeah. They call it.
There's no apartments usually on
ground that. Ground
floor. The ground floor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the ground floor is not.
Number one.
Number one. Yeah, exactly. Mm. So she actually fell or whatever from the fifth story of the building. And based on the amount of drugs in her system, she would most definitely have been in a coma-like state when she fell.
Okay. So she might not have, well, she clearly couldn't have jumped herself, apparently. Yeah. Okay.
So the police were now sure they were looking at a homicide.
Okay.
They hypothesized that someone had carried her up to the rooftop terrace because the building did not have an elevator.
Right.
And after removing her clothes, the burns were inflicted by pouring the perfume over her and setting her alight with the matches that they found on the roof in order to remove any incriminating evidence on her body and on her underwear.
Such a messy job.
Right?
I'm amazed how messy it is so far.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is very, very
odd. It's all over the place, right?
Right. Mm. Hence why I wanted to do this story, because it's just weird, right? She was then, of course, lifted over the railing. There was a fence, you know, that wasn't just like open air at the rooftop terrace. So she was lifted over the railing fence that surrounded the terrace and thrown into the void of the interior courtyard, colliding with the clotheslines of the neighbors below before hitting the ground face first. So the police were also like, nobody commits suicide diving face first, right? That's just not a thing.
I guess not. I don't know statistics, but when you said,
I mean, nobody
face first, I was like, that's nasty. But I don't know. I think I've heard that before.
I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, into and then the neither sea, have maybe. The
police. Police, you know, this is part of their job, and
they should know.
They come across suicides and stuff, you know. So. With their victim still unidentified and unable to locate the female neighbor from the building, police continued their investigation. They returned to apartment 2 on the third floor, where earlier they had gotten no response. At this point, they were able to discover that it was being rented by Montserrat Carreta, a 31-year-old teacher. And this time, she answered the door.
Okay.
But according to the investigator, she was acting cagey and seemed nervous about answering their questions.
Mm.
She wouldn't invite them in, and she would only speak to them through the cracked door of her apartment, saying she was busy and didn't have time to speak.
Mm.
So if Monse, which is how I'll refer to her because everybody referred to her as Monse. So if Monse was alive and well, who was this woman who fell to her death in the patio behind her house? Meanwhile, the father of a young woman living in Sabadell was growing concerned about his daughter. On December 1st, he had planned to meet his 27-year-old daughter, Elena Jovan. So he was planning to meet her for lunch in Mataró.
Mataró.
Another small town, 32 kilometers from Barcelona. His daughter, Elena, had grown up there with her family and had moved to Sabadell to be closer to work the year before. She failed to arrive at her lunch date with her father without contacting him, which he found to be quite odd. He called her home but got no answer. He put his concerns aside and figured he would hear from her soon. On Sunday the 2nd, the family received a call from a friend of Elena's telling them that she had missed a meeting with them, furthering the family's alarm. So he decided to take the 40-minute drive to her apartment in Sabadell. When she didn't answer the door, he entered the flat to find nothing awry. Her coat and scarf were draped over the chair at her dining room table. It appeared as though she had left, but had planned to return shortly after. On Monday morning of the 3rd, her father called the library where Elena worked to see if he could locate her there. He was informed that Elena hadn't shown up for work that day and that she'd also missed her shift on the previous Friday afternoon. Mm. Now they feared that their daughter had been missing for 3 days, mm. and they went to the police in yeah. Sabado.
Good move.
Yeah. Must be so fucking terrible.
It's horrible. So sad.
I know. The worst. So, when the police received the missing person report from the family, they immediately thought of their Jane Doe. Mm. They requested that the family provide them with a copy of her DNI, which is the identity card.
Their ID
card. The national ID card, yeah. and the license plate number of her car. They compared the photo on the ID and thought it looked like a good match.
Okay.
They showed the family the clothing that was found on the rooftop, which they verified to have belonged to Elena. Mm. Her car was discovered parked not far from the house on Calvet de Estrella Street. Mm. So the police now had the name of their victim.
Right. Elena
Juban. Jubani. Juban.
Juban, yeah.
Shall we take a break?
Let's.
And we're back.
We're here.
All right, so Elena Juban. No, Juban.
Juban.
Was from the city. Yeah. Listen.
You could do the ING sounds. The ING
well,
sound
I've been saying it Jubani.
Okay. That's true. You're changing now.
Because yeah. I watched a documentary.
And they were saying that?
Well, because it's a documentary in Catalan.
Yeah.
And then I listened to it in Spanish.
Okay. Was it dubbed?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we apologize. I'm not that good in Catalan, but and like certain.
And I am way not good in Catalan.
Are weird
because I don't speak it at all.
I am studying it, but surnames are a special thing.
Yeah, you kind of that's something. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, if you know, it should be
something you learn with time or being in the place or you know.
Catalan is pretty regular, and I was surprised that the final E wasn't really pronounced at all. Mm. They just go Juban, but it's like
you know. Yeah. We looked it up before we started.
We did. That's why we're
to
still
see how, that's we're why fresh. We're debating it. Yeah. How the hell do we say this? So we don't know, and I'll apologize to anybody. I don't want to offend anyone by pronouncing anything wrong, but you know, whatever. I'm not Catalan, and I'm not Basque, so I'm going to pronounce things wrong.
Oh, my great grandmother's Catalan, so she is fuming.
Oof, turning in her grave, right?
Maybe. Hopefully not.
She's very proud of you, Douglas,
I love her
I'm
very
sure.
much.
She's very proud. Okay. So, Elena Juban. We're going to go with that. That's what we found when we looked up.
Mm-hmm.
So, she was from the city of Mataró.
Mataró.
Mataró. The capital city in the Marisme?
Yeah, I think Maresme. Yeah,
Maresme region.
Maresme.
She studied journalism at the university, Mm-hmm. I don't know what university. I didn't look it up. She was involved in the cultural and social activities of the region. She started her professional career doing internships at El Punt del Maresme, mm-hmm. Television de Mataró, mm-hmm. and the Roba Faves bookstore in her hometown. Mm-hmm. In 2000, she got the job as a librarian in Sentmenat.
A lot of times they say an E as an A. Mm. But so it's a bit hard to know unless you've heard it.
Okay. Well,
I'm guessing that's Sent.
Send us an email. No,
even though it says Sent.
There she was in charge of the children's section.
Let me just make an incision. Send us an email.
Incision.
Just send us an email.
Make an incision
what
here.
What was the word?
You said incision.
Yeah, but what's the word you're supposed to say? No, I'm sure
incision
is doable.
I like it.
I do too. It's very colorful. It's like paints a picture.
My incision is, just send us an email. Say hi.
For fuck's sake, somebody.
Tell us you're like an X or Y. Tell us you're just, and we'll love it. We'll love it. So
we will. We will fucking celebrate it on this podcast. The first email we get from a listener that we don't know. It's not my mom. It's not a friend. It's
exactly.
Like somebody we don't even know. The first email we get, we're going to fucking celebrate it.
It is.
Shall we get back into it?
Sorry, yes.
Okay, so. All right. Who was this woman? Okay, so in 2000, she got the job as the librarian in Saint-Benet.
Mm-hmm.
Where she was in charge of the children's section. The library was located a 45-minute drive from Mataro, so she decided to move to the town of Sabadell to cut her commute time and probably experience some independence from her parents, right? Because, you know, she's in her 20s, time to move out. She lived alone in an apartment in the Cru Alta neighborhood of town. And wanting to make some new friends with similar interests, she joined a local hiking club, the Sabadell Hiking Union. So in Catalan or in Spanish, it's UES. So I might just refer to it as UES because it's referred to a lot. So which means Union
Equina.
No. Excursionista.
Oh, sorry.
De Sabadell.
I got mixed. Yes, okay.
So once the police had established the identity of their victim, they set about looking into her life and the people closest to her for leads into her death. The press at the time maintained the story that Elena had been the victim of a suicide, and this was at the behest of the police, as they didn't want to clue anyone into the fact that they were investigating a possible murder.
Oh, that's very interesting. I love the, was it chess move? 3D chess move, right? I mean,
tell me.
Let's just say
a
3D, chess move.
A 3D print, what?
Chess move. That's usually when it's a very convoluted thing, but I guess it's just the chess move right now, to be honest. Right? Yeah. Let's not give them that
print,
much.
Okay.
The joke is that there's a 3D chess in Star Trek, and people, when something's very, but we don't, clearly we don't know, I don't think, well, originally there were no rules. I think now there is a, like, backtracked, they try to make rules for it. So when everything's very complicated, you just say it's 3D chess.
Okay.
So I've heard that a lot. That's why I was saying
it. All right, I'll see if I can start sprinkling my conversations with that.
With 3D chess moves.
That's a total 3D chess move. okay.
I approve. Message approved by Douglas.
Approved. Okay, so according to the documentary that I watched, Crims, her family went along with this ruse to assist the police in doing their job.
Nice.
Okay. All right. So their first tip came from Elena's father, Joan Yubani, or Yuban. He told police that a few months before her death, Elena had told him about a couple of mysterious incidents. On September 17th of 2001... while leaving her house, she found a bag with a bottle of oracha and some pastries. And in one article I saw, it was chocolate croissants. A note accompanied the mysterious gift, written in Catalan. It read, Elena, surprise! We are passing by here and we say, let's see, Elena, what's the story? About us? We will call you. To eat it all. Okay, so... what's the story is probably like, what's happening? And then, and us, we'll call you. So eat it all, eat everything, or like enjoy the food or whatever. So strange, right?
I mean,
not maybe not.
I mean, it's strange that they didn't sign it.
Yeah.
Jose and Maria come through town. I mean, oh yes, clearly the croissant people.
Elena must have felt that the gift was left for her by friends because all those who knew her knew that she loved oracha.
Is it not orchata?
Oh, sorry.
Yes. Orchata. Okay. That's
oh,
it.
My God. Every time. Orchata.
Yes,
yeah.
I know what orchata
is. What is orchata?
It's a little... I would call it an...
The images in the documentary showed it like a creamy...
It is. It's like a...
Looking
a
drink.
Juice thing. Like a, let's call it a smoothie. It's more like a smoothie because they get something similar to, let's say, a peanut, which is the orchata. It's also called orchata. And you just mix that with a little bit of water and liquidize it. And then you get this drink. It's kind of like, it's like lots of protein.
Oh, it's like a protein shake, yeah.
Yeah, it's but it's very smooth, not very strong tasting. It's very nice and easy to drink. It's, I would say creamy is a good description.
Okay. Mm. Well, apparently she loved this stuff.
It's nice.
So she thought, you know, friends knew that she loved this and left it for her, right? Mm-hmm. With some pastries.
I mean, it's, you'd have to be really... If you didn't know her and knew this, you really have to be a good, what do you call it when people follow somebody?
Oh, like a fan?
Yeah, like when he's...
Or you mean a stalker?
That's the word I was looking for.
Okay. Yes, that's a good call.
Mm.
Could be. So if it had been friends stopping by to say hi, why hadn't they rang her door? She'd been home all morning and no one had knocked or rang the bell to see if she was home. She found the package as she was leaving for work that day, and it's unknown if Elena drank or ate anything that was in the package or that they had been given to
her. She didn't mention that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it wasn't mentioned in the articles or that I read.
I just for the square people in the room like me.
Okay.
Horchata is known as tiger nuts in English, apparently. Oh, did you like that?
So tiger nuts. Julie. Dirty. Tiger nuts.
Your mind is dirty, to be honest.
Well, I can't I'm just help like, it. Tiger Jesus. Nuts. Tiger nuts. What the fuck?
Look, it's on the English language,
the type
okay?
Of, that's the type of nut.
Mm-hmm.
I've
mm-hmm.
never heard of it. Mm-hmm. But of course I thought of balls.
Cyperus esculentus is the name of the plant.
Like that's going to make a difference.
Chufa. Or tiger nut, or atadwe, or yellow nut sedge, or earth almond.
Earth almond, okay. That's,
you see, it is very nutty, yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. From the sedge family.
Where does it come from?
It is most of the Eastern Hemisphere, including Southern Europe, Africa, Madagascar, as well as the Middle East and the Indian subcontinent.
Okay.
There you go.
So look at Elena. She had, you know, like worldly... taste.
It's very typical in Spain and Catalonia, though. Oh. South in the south. It's not something here. Okay. I think it doesn't grow as well in
I've never heard of
country.
It. Mm. So, all right. So the mystery deepened.
Mm.
23 days later, on October 9th, again she found a bag of goodies and a note at her door.
Okay.
This time she received more pastries and a Granini brand peach juice. We all know Granini, right?
I mean,
it's a popular juice brand.
It's a juice brand, yep.
Yeah. The handwritten note said, quote, Elena, above all, we hope that you take this with the same sense of humor as we do. The third time, we will reveal the mystery.
Oh.
You will surely have a few laughs. We would very much like to meet again on a UES excursion. We will talk about it. Now let's see if we can find a good, nice, and cheap place in Sabadell to perfect our English. Ah, bon appetit. Don't make us look ugly, eh? On the third, you will invite us. Without a doubt. Kisses. End quote. So, right, like this is direct translation, right?
Can. Yeah, so it is.
It's
but...
like very choppy. It's probably much more...
It sounds more natural in Castilian or Catalan.
Yeah, of course. But, when they say on the third, you will invite us, they're saying that she will be the one that treats them to a drink or some treat or whatever, some food.
Yeah.
Right? When you say invite here, it means that I'll buy, it's my turn, I'll buy.
Yeah.
Right? I'll invite you. So, on this occasion, Elena took the juice with her to work, where she drank some of it while she was doing some of her daily tasks at the library, right?
Mm-hmm.
A short while after ingesting the drink, she started feeling extremely drowsy and debilitated.
Wow.
She told her coworkers that she didn't feel well and needed to go home.
Mm-hmm.
But she realized that she was in no state to drive herself home.
Mm-hmm.
And she either, these are conflicting stories, she either got a friend or, in the documentary, it said a married couple came to drive her home, or... co-workers brought her home.
Maybe all three.
Maybe a co-worker came with her.
With her husband.
No, she didn't have a husband.
No, like the worker's co-worker husband.
Maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So somebody gave her a lift home, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the information given to police later came from her co-workers, who said that they had been there to accompany her home.
Mm-hmm.
They said that she was so dizzy and unstable that she needed assistance to walk and to get herself into bed at her apartment.
Mm.
Once there, they offered to make her some tea, which just spilled out of her mouth when she tried to drink it.
Wow.
They put her into bed, where she slept deeply for the rest of the day and all of the night.
Mm.
The next day, she reported that she felt better, but she could recall essentially nothing of what had happened the previous day.
Sounds like a
drug.
That drug, yeah. Was it GBH or something?
No. I don't know.
The date rape drug, you know.
Wait, you'll find out. So, Elena, right? Remember, she studied journalism.
Yes.
So her journalistic instinct and intrigue prompted her to have this juice tested.
Oh, good for her.
She had asked her coworker to take it to a local pharmacy, and in an interview with that coworker that the coworker gave on this documentary, she recalled that she found it odd. The coworker thought to herself that usually when you eat or drink something that makes you feel sick, you throw it out and you forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're just like, oh, I got food poisoning or whatever.
But she didn't know it was a present, so...
Maybe, who knows, but she just thought it was weird that, like, oh, maybe it was a juice that was off and it made her sick.
But if I'd bought it, I'd think that too. But if it was a present, I'd want it tested, right?
Well, exactly. That's why Elena was like, let's test this, right?
Nice. So maybe the friend didn't know or the coworker didn't know.
Maybe that, not. Maybe because she couldn't explain it because she was all fucked up, right?
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
So Elena did have it tested in a private laboratory where it was discovered to contain benzodiazepine.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. Diazepine.
Got it. You got it.
Which is a type of sleeping pill.
Okay.
And this unnerved her, but she took no further action apart from saving the notes that accompanied the gifts.
Okay. Well, there's a clear, you know, that's at least it's connected because it was what was found in her blood.
In her body, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow, the plot thickens.
Mm-hmm. So as part of the investigation, the police went to search her flat. They found her jacket and scarf draped over her chair, as her father had described it.
Mm-hmm.
There were no foreign fingerprints found, or there were some wine glasses and some wine that they analyzed, but found nothing. Her computer was checked. They also had a clue to a timeline of her last movements. She had taken her last birth control pill on Friday morning, indicating that she had missed her pills from Thursday onwards.
Mm.
Or, sorry. From Saturday onwards, right? Mm-hmm. So she took her last pill on Friday morning. Most importantly, the police found those notes that she had received.
Mm. Oh, the notes as well. Oh, good.
Because she kept them.
Some writing on it, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So they were taken as evidence because the drug that had caused her to become so fucked up after drinking that juice was the same that was found in her body. And she died.
It's cooking. It's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting closer. It's warming up.
Should we take another break?
Let's.
Before we go into the juice of it.
The juicier part. The horchata part. The tiger nut part.
The tiger nuts part of the case.
Hold on to your chabella.
Hold on, everybody. Here we go. Now we're back. Okay, so police went about establishing a timeline of Elena's last movements.
Hmm.
They determined that on Friday, November 30th, she had worked on her computer until 9:55 a.m. She later spoke on the phone around 11:30 to her friend Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
And then left her house around noon. She drove and parked her car in the neighborhood near the house at 48 Calvet de Estrella Street, where her body was found 2 days later on Sunday morning.
Mm.
She was scheduled to work at 3 that Friday afternoon at the library and then never showed up.
Mm.
In the forensic report, it was surmised that she had ingested an enormous amount of the diazepine.
Nice.
Diazepine. Most likely in a coffee. on the Friday that she was last heard from. They explained that the amount found in her body at death indicated that she'd already passed some of the drug through her urine.
Ooh.
And that it takes the body many hours to start to expel the drug. So she had ingested them well before her death. And then the caffeine in her body also indicated that she'd ingested it 2 days earlier. So that's what it said in these articles. So I'm not sure, like, can you, like, does caffeine, like, stay in your body?
That long? I don't know.
Yeah, and, like, this amount of caffeine means that she had a cup of coffee 2 days ago, right? Like, is it in their body? Like, is it just, like, do you have a constant stream of caffeine if you drink coffee all the time? Like,
I think...
like, because I drink a lot of coffee.
I don't. But...
I drink, like, probably three to four cups a day.
Okay. I think that's...
which is a lot.
That's it, touching the upper limits of the recommended daily allowance.
Listen, I don't need any more lectures on how I take care of my body. I do enough.
You're doing a great job, Julie.
I'm doing my best, you guys. I'm just trying to stay awake. I'm trying to be on it. So I do drink a lot of coffee, though.
Well, caffeine sounds like it stays in your body a little longer. I mean...
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's maybe why when I drink coffee so much, I don't ever... like, I know some people are like, oh, I'm feeling all wired. And I never actually feel wired from caffeine.
I'm not
affected by it at all. So anyway, that's what they determined. Those were her last moments, right?
Yes, we established we don't know enough about coffee.
She disappeared on Friday, and then she died on Sunday.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm getting that.
So, so the anonymous notes that the police had found in Elena's apartment didn't provide them with any fingerprints, but they did lead them to a batch of suspects where handwriting comparisons could potentially link them to the perpetrators, right?
Okay. Oh, the walking
because blood. Of the drug that she had drank and the juice that she got in one of the packages that she received with the note was the very same that was found in her body. When she died.
Yes. The drug, yeah.
So they had the notes, right? They found them in her apartment.
Circumstantial, I guess. Like,
well, it's a pretty good link.
It's a
circumstantial link, yes. You're right. It is circumstantial. You're right. Mm-hmm. So in the second note that she received in October of that year, there was that reference to the hiking club that she belonged to, the UES, the Union Excursionista de Sabadell. So, the hiking club of Sabadell. The note said, "We would very much like to meet again on a UES excursion. We'll talk about it. Now let's see if we can find a good cheap place in Sabadell to perfect our English." So they also mentioned, like, English classes.
It's a weird one. Sabadell is not an English-speaking city, I mean. Ads.
No, it's not. And in these years, it's like 2001, so it was like people were like, well, we should probably learn English if we want to. For jobs and...
It's true, but...
as a journalist.
It's an odd...
right? A journalist.
Yeah, but it's still an odd, you know, for me, because Sabadell, like, if you said that in Barcelona, I'd be like, yeah, there are tons of tourists, or not even tourists, just expats or immigrants living in Barcelona who will join the walking club, and maybe that, you know, but Sabadell, 2001, it seems way too early for there to be any English speakers in Sabadell.
Yeah.
Like, okay, 4 or 5.
4, 5, max, like, out of the 200,000.
No, but like us, when we arrived in Bilbao almost 20 years ago, I mean, you could count on your fingers how many Anglophones lived in the city, right? Like, we never bumped into any English speakers ever.
Yeah.
We were it for like 5 to 10 years, and then we started...
And now you hear them talking in the streets all the time.
Now there's tons of us here.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2001 is early.
Yeah. Okay, so the investigators, which would include the, like, investigative judge, because remember, we've talked about in previous episodes that there's always a judge, which I guess is like the prosecution side of the law, that investigates the crime, as well as the cops.
I'm remembering that, yes. Yeah.
So they went to the club, this hiking club, to find out who she was most friendly with, which led them to 5 of the members.
Ooh.
So among them were Montserrat, Carreta, the woman.
From the building
where she fell from.
Mm-hmm.
Her boyfriend, Santiago La Iglesia.
So So that explains the us and the we mm-hmm. in the notes. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm liking it.
So he was a lawyer. Montserrat was a teacher. He was a lawyer. Anna Echaguivel.
I keep doing it wrong.
I don't know what's wrong with my brain. It's my brain, you guys. Please. I have a problem. Okay, so they didn't give any profession for her.
Okay. Is this our best connection?
You've got it.
Oh, my God.
You got it. Shabby.
Okay.
But X-A-V-I.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also very popular in the Basque Country.
It is very popular. But I think also in Catalonia. I don't know if they
It is, write actually. It and so I found that out. I thought he was going to be my Basque link originally. Like, I was so like, oh, no, no, Javi, yes. Of course, okay, that's a Basque link.
That's cute.
But it's X-A-V-I. And here it's X-A-B-I.
Yeah, yeah, always be. Yep. No V's in Euskera and Basque. Right? No V's in Basque. Yeah.
And everyone I talked to go like, no, Xavi. And they were like, well, that's Catalonian.
Mm-hmm.
And they named like a few footballers that are named that.
It's super
and I was
typical.
Like, well, but it's also. And then I looked into the origin of the name and it's Javier, right?
Yeah.
But it's then became, and then it just had its different
ways of pronouncing Xavier and Xavi, yeah.
Yeah. In Xavi. Different places.
Mm-hmm.
So, Xavi Jimenez. He was an employee of the Barcelona Provincial Council. And then Jaume Sanyei.
I can't see. Find me.
Sanyei.
Or Sanyei, but
Sanyei.
Yeah.
So anyway, those were the five people that they said
suspects.
She was the most friendly with in this club, right?
Okay.
So these fellow hikers were all called in for questioning, of course, to establish their alibis and to fill them out. The two they were most interested in establishing their movements were Montserrat, or Monse, and her boyfriend Santiago, who I will now refer to as Santi for the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why? Because Monse lived at that
address.
The house, where she fell from. And she was also the woman who appeared to be very uncomfortable when police came to interview the neighbors after discovering the body behind the building.
And she's in the walking club.
And according to the documentary, the Crims documentary, her boyfriend Santi also resided there with her.
Ooh.
It was reported by friends and family that Monse had changed or had tried to change her rental agreement to put him on the lease. And they had purchased a couple's bedroom set.
I guess.
Matrimonial bed, which they call a matrimonial bed.
Okay, a double bed.
Which is a double bed.
I mean,
which just means two people sleep in that bed.
I guess that
and
was...
And in Spanish, it's like, they call it a matrimonial, right?
Sure, sure.
Like, do you want a singles or a matrimonial?
I mean, that's...
When they offer you a hotel room, that's what they say, right?
Yes. I have to say, I've never stayed in a hotel in Spain.
I have, and in fact, my mom's ex-boyfriend was offended when they referred to it as a matrimonial bed because he was like, well, we're not married, but that is no business of yours. Because he understood that it meant married, you know?
Yeah. That is hilarious. How about I get offended? I'm like, yeah, we're not allowed to get married.
Yeah. When gays can be married in this country, then I will get a matrimonial bed.
It just hurt on
singles
her.
Singles all the way.
Yeah. OMG. Wow. I mean, it's such a 2001 thing to say, right?
Right.
It's like, who gives a fuck these days? Like, you bought a double bed.
Well, they, like, actually showed on the documentary, like, the purchase receipt.
Oh, my gosh.
Of the bed and the two bedside tables that you would have if there was a couple, right?
Yeah. Like, the only thing I, like... Okay.
They made a point of that. Like, he clearly lived there with her. Because,
yeah, that's a good point. That's what
right?
I... Like, that's good evidence for that, is right. for the fact that it wasn't only her. That
they're like trying to prove that he also mm-hmm. lived there, right?
Which is very fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they were doing their job, right?
Yeah. I think it's just weird, but it made sense in this context, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, they're a couple, and he pretty, I think we all think he lives there, right?
I suppose. I don't think I think that. I think I suppose it.
Yeah, okay. Then you stay there. Okay. So the couple were the first to come in for questioning, and they were interviewed separately.
Mm.
Monse said that on Friday she had gone to her job as a primary school teacher, and that she and Santi had gone to watch a Sabadell football match in the afternoon. They returned to her flat where they slept that night. Early the following morning, they went on an excursion with the hiking group.
Oh.
Santi said that he and Monse slept at his parents' house on Friday. So that they could actually rise early to hike for that hike on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And he had made no mention of the football match in his interview.
Interesting.
So, police are like, what the fuck, man?
Mm-hmm.
Their stories aren't adding up, right? So, the following day, Santi returned to the station because he wanted to add some information to his story.
Oh, he figured out. He
talked to Monse. Mm-hmm. So now he said that he had he returned and he had a much more detailed account of the day.
Football was excellent. They scored two points.
Exactly. Like, wait. What he said he had misremembered the day, and now he recalls that Monse had showed up his work on Friday afternoon. They were watching TV, and they saw that there was an ad for some cheap tickets to go attend the Sabadell football match, and they decided to go.
Jesus.
He detailed how he had made them sandwiches to take into the match and how much they had paid for their tickets.
Don't they always say that when you're lying, you add too many details?
Too many details. Yeah. That's right.
Oh.
That's right. And then he said that they had had dinner at her house, but that they did sleep at his parents' house. So these contradictions and then his modifications to the story just made the police way more suspicious.
Good for Catalan Mossos de Squadra, mm-hmm. who I assume is investigating this.
According to the cops, I mean, in this documentary, one cop, the one that was like the lead investigator, I think, or at least the one that wanted to give interviews,
mm-hmm.
he said that Santi came across as much more confident and self-assured, but also very cold and reserved. And it wasn't lost on them that he himself was a lawyer who specialized in criminology.
Yeah. So he's got to play cool. He knows to play
He knows what he's doing. He would know that there'd be no way to prove whether or not they had attended the match that afternoon, and that his parents would probably back up his alibi if he asked them.
Mm-hmm.
Monse, on the other hand, seemed more unsure of herself, someone that they believed was being coached in what to say to the police by her boyfriend. So they were all like, these two are kind of, you know.
It's a good lead.
Yeah. And then they asked Monse to confirm her presence at work for her morning and afternoon classes. And she said that she believed that she, you know, had done her morning shift and her afternoon shift at the school, which is like 9 to 1 and then 3 to 5, right, as a teacher at a school.
I believe you.
Yeah. But then she recalled that on one Friday in November, she had felt ill and then had missed her afternoon classes.
Ooh, inconsistency.
Mm-hmm. She said she couldn't remember if it was on the Friday the 23rd or if it was the 30th. And the police verified later that it had been on the 30th. And this is the same day that Elena went missing.
Piping hot.
Mm-hmm. So, additionally, police discovered that the excursion that the couple had gone on with the hiking group on the Saturday, the December 1st, the Saturday after the Friday, was a last-minute decision taken by this pair, by the couple.
Sure.
They hadn't signed up for it in advance, they just called last-minute to say, can we come?
Oh.
On this excursion? And so then they went on this excursion on Saturday.
I mean, would you have to call, just turn up, no? But yeah, sure.
I don't know. I guess, I don't know. I've never been in a hiking club, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know what the...
We're 12 people already. I think another 2 people trailing behind us is going to just be too much.
Maybe they take a bus, you know, and you need spaces on the bus or whatever.
It's possible.
Anyway, so they go on this hike.
Mm.
They hadn't signed up for it.
Right.
And other witnesses or testified to the fact that they recalled that they left early from the hike or the excursion because Monse wasn't feeling well.
Ooh, of course she killed the person there last night and she's not very good with her conscience. Okay, okay.
In Chavi's interview, he said that on the night of November 30th, he'd gone out for some beers with a member of the hiking group, Haume. However, Haume said that he'd gone out for drinks with another set of friends that did not include Chavi.
Just, I mean, because it's Catalan, it would be Jaume, but
Jaume. Yeah, you okay. Do you. Fine. Listen, I'm doing me.
I just noticed it now.
Jaume. So, okay, Jaume. Okay, I'll call him Jaume from now on. So Jaume, you know, he said he went out with some friends for drinks and that Chavi wasn't there.
Mm, all right.
Then he also returned later to change his story and said that he had been out drinking with Chavi.
Okay.
Okay.
It's getting complicated.
And then it looked like the police didn't even look into this discrepancy.
Okay.
In their alibis. They were already formulating a hypothesis.
Oh, right.
Right? So they were getting their tunnel vision on what happened.
Yeah, that is an issue with humans, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I couldn't find out what Anna had said to the police when they first questioned her. But Anna is what brings us to our Basque link.
Yes.
Okay. So, Anna Echeguibel.
Echeguibel?
Echeguibel, which I've never heard
that name. I have not either.
I said it to Bobby, too, and he'd never heard that name either. She was born in Baracaldo.
She was? Okay.
Baracatam, right?
Baracatam.
So, many people from Bilbao are born in Baracaldo because that's where Cruces Hospital is. Yes. And it's like the maternity ward.
Yes. And only Europeans care what municipality we're born in. But yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
fun. Yeah, when I ask people, where are you born? And I always assume that they'll just say their hometown. Like, I'm from Bilbao or I'm from wherever.
Mm-hmm.
They're always like, Baracaldo. And I'm like, but you're not actually from Baracaldo. Yeah, your mother went there to give birth and then you, you know, returned home.
It's so irritating.
It's weird. It's just weird to me. Anyway, so she was someone who raised the police's suspicions because when they interviewed members of the hiking club, they inquired if there was anyone in the group that perhaps Elena had had a beef with.
Right.
More than one recalled that on one of the group's excursions to the Costa Brava, they witnessed a heated argument between Elena and Anna. The motive was unclear, but it seemed to do with the planning of a future trip together. Elena's sister, Diana Gonzalez, said that Elena had spoken about the relationship with her. The two women had become close friends and were planning to visit the Basque Country together.
How cute.
She was like, you have to come see the hills of the Basque Country.
You have to try the Pinchos.
Mountains. You've got to go up Pagasari. We got Pagasari. We got Archada. We got Pinchos. Yeah, she was probably selling it, right?
Everything.
Like, you've got to come to the Basque Country. So, but as the relationship progressed, Anna had become tiresome and overwhelmingly persistent about planning this trip.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that Elena decided she no longer wanted to go.
Oh.
And in the Spanish versions of the articles I read, they called her pesada.
Right.
She became very pesada. So that's
a pain.
A pain, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, pesada is an interesting word that they use here a lot to say. It literally means, like, heavy.
Yeah.
So, like, it can be annoying, but it's, like, more than annoying. It's, like, a different... Like, you know exactly what they mean when they say pesada? Mm-hmm. Yeah, pain in the ass, right? Like, it's just somebody being a pain in the ass.
Yeah, stop being a pain. God. She's such a pain.
She's such a pain in the ass. So her sister speculated that this was perhaps what instigated the argument that the others had witnessed. Okay. So the police and the investigating judge, however, thought this was more likely a case of unrequited love between Anna and Elena. And that, and then they decided that's the string they're going to pull on for their hypothesis of the crime.
So they're supposing Elena is...
For the motive.
...is homosexual.
Mm-hmm. So the first investigating judge on the case was Manuel Horacio
I think it's Horacio.
García.
Mm-hmm.
He was convinced that what happened to Elena was definitely, quote unquote, a woman's thing.
Oh.
Sparked somehow by, quote unquote, jealousy.
Okay. I think he forgot about the white liquid.
Which they could not identify. Yeah, I think sperm would be really identifiable at that point, right?
Oh, okay.
So it's 2001. It's not 1912.
Some woman, 12. Female liquids. I don't know.
Yeah, it's discharge. It's just discharge. Maybe they couldn't identify because it was actually just female discharge and they don't ever research female bodies. So
I thought you were like,
we don't know what this is. This is a mystery.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say they'd never seen it, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also.
Anywho's, I never have, so I'm not saying anything. But we all know why.
So, you should really get on the police force.
Yeah. Need investigation here. I have no idea what we're looking at.
So, yeah, the judge was, like, convinced that this was, like, a woman thing. Hmm. Like, the notes, everything. He thought this is, like, clearly, like, a woman's, like, manipulative, like, strategy thing.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah, because... Guys, go and get it, right?
Like, yeah. Like, this apparently is weird. It must be weird, right? So, investigators focused on those top three suspects. Monse, because she lived in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she was the only one that would have had access to the rooftop terrace from her flat without being seen by other neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if
there's a key,
because
but...
he most likely resided with Monse. Mm-hmm. And then Anna, because, you know, she was a lesbian.
Or she had a Basque haircut, and they were just racist.
She had a Basque haircut, making her look like a lesbian when she wasn't.
Oh.
Ooh, no shade, Basques. I'm not trying to throw any shade.
No.
I live here, and, you know. And you would all agree, all right?
I bet everybody would agree that the girls who like girls have better haircuts in the Basque country.
There's a lot of girls that like girls here, though.
There, I mean, I don't think more than anywhere
else. Maybe not
else,
more than anywhere else, but they're more maybe, I don't know. I don't think it's more, no. You're right.
It's just that the Basque nationalist haircuts look very lesbian to a non, you know. It's like when Americans come to Europe and say...
Yeah, they're like, just
guys,
like, is everybody... Yeah.
Yeah, they think they look gay because they're too, like...
Metrosexual, yeah.
It's similar.
Like Frenchmen just all look metrosexual, right?
But you can say that about Spaniards. You can say that about Italians.
Okay, so, you know, they're focusing on these three. And
for some reason, we don't know why.
Well, and none of them could actually verify where they were on the night of the events.
And all this changing
or
stories.
Give a reason why they hadn't gone to work on Monday the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So the following day.
Oh, so
all
Anna,
three of them missed work on Monday.
Oh, this is...
Nor could Chavi
explain
his absence from work on Monday.
That's right.
Okay?
Right.
So I will give you the police's version of what happened to Elena.
Okay.
This is their theory that they're working on.
Okay?
So they think on Friday, November 30th, she went to the home of her friends at 48 Calvet de Estella Street.
Mm-hmm.
Monse and Santi,
yes,
or both.
Mm-hmm.
One or the other, or both.
Mm-hmm.
It's unknown.
Mm-hmm.
She was served a coffee with an ungodly amount of stupefying drugs and was knocked unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
She remained comatose, perhaps bound,
mm-hmm,
in the flat for the rest of Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, missing her shift at the library. And then all day Saturday, when she missed her lunch date with her dad, until she was carried to the rooftop in the early hours of Sunday morning, where she was disrobed and had her bra and underwear set on fire before being thrown to her death into the interior patio. So why? They didn't know.
Yeah.
They could not figure out a motive.
Motive,
right?
Yeah.
They thought sexual abuse.
They
didn't know because they still were unable to identify the substance that they had found in her vagina.
Okay.
They thought maybe it was like a sick game that got out of control that was connected to the notes that she had received. Like, it was like a...
That's rubbish.
Yeah,
okay.
Right? I don't know.
I mean, everything
so
seems very factual.
Pretty much, you know, tunnel vision, right? They wanted to work on proving this theory by and then they first looked at analyzing the anonymous notes.
I mean, I don't think they're going on, you know, they're not assuming too much, I don't think.
No.
Seems pretty
But
reasonable.
Motive is, like, usually...
We don't see
really
any motive
You have to establish a motive,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't see any at all.
Right? So, so if you recall, the first note appeared to have been written by only one person.
Oh, did they not say us? I think they did, no? They
it was
didn't?
The second one.
Okay.
But one half of the second note had been written by a separate person. So there's two different handwritings.
Oh,
on the
so
second
incriminating.
Note.
Who the fuck does that? I bet the lawyer added his writing because he thinks he's so fucking good he'll never be caught. And the freaking dickhead just gave himself out. I call it.
So anyway, we're going to end the podcast here. Douglas has solved the crime.
As if. I mean, it didn't solve it. I'm just saying.
No, no, no. You're not.
Sounds
right.
Sus.
That's right. So there was two different handwriting.
Yes, there was.
On the second
easy to
note,
know.
Right?
Easy
so
to
police
know.
Compared the two different handwriting samples from the note against, from this note against the membership forms that the two women had filled out to enter the hiking group. So they had their like inscription. How do you call it? Their sign up form or their like.
Yeah, the sign up form,
yeah,
I guess.
Their, yeah,
write up for
the membership
form.
Right. Mm-hmm. To join the club. Right. Mm-hmm. The victim's lawyer, so Elena's lawyers, they wanted the police to look at all of those friends.
Yeah.
They wanted them to say, like, compare them to everybody.
Yeah, of course.
But because the judge in the case was convinced that this is something between women, he requested that they only compare the notes to Monse's and Anna's handwriting.
So fucking sexist already.
Mm-hmm. And he left the men out completely. And the report that came back with the handwriting analysis was a match to both of the women.
Oh, well, that's a bit of a surprise. I mean, it just still doesn't excuse the guy. Maybe he's also in it.
Mm.
So it's food
and
for
he's
thought.
He's clever enough not to use his own handwriting, right? Like, ladies, write this out.
Fucking manipulator dickhead. I mean, at least, yeah, it's looking like that so far. I mean, we're assuming he's involved because, hello, he's involved. He lost, he missed his
work day. I think
you
have very good instincts, Douglas.
He missed his work day.
And I've read this story, so I believe you've got very good instincts.
I mean, you know, it's a game. That's why we listen to the podcast, isn't it? We're trying to, like, figure out what the F is happening.
Yeah, so we're going to end this story here.
For now.
This is going to be part one of the story because there's still much more to go into.
It's cool.
It's going to get even, well, even more
convoluted.
Yeah.
Convoluted.
But anyway, yeah. So we'll stay tuned for part two.
Yes.
Be sure to listen to part two.
Yes. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Do you have a mini crime time for this week? I have a mini crime time. And it's so stupid, like most of my mini crime times.
I mean, I love the stupid mini crime times. They're the best.
Well, I went running this week. I haven't been doing it as much as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the real crime is that I suffer for it for like days afterward. Like I'm sore.
Okay. I mean, I
but
like
anyway,
that
that's
sore.
Not the real
I
crime.
I like that sore.
That's not, no, I don't. It's like, God, like, I didn't used to feel this sore so for so long afterward.
I think, look
it
how much.
It just means I'm not doing it enough or something.
How much exercise you've been doing. You're such a good person. Ouch. Yes, I am. Ouch. That's what I go.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was running in this park that I go to, and I was walking at one point because I ran up these like set of stairs. It's a really long set of stairs, mm-hmm. So it's a very hardcore like
yeah,
you know. So I always walk until I get to the park area, and then I start running again in the park. So I like to cool down, like recover from running up the stairs. And so I was doing that, and then I'm always listening to some podcast or something while I'm running, and I start hearing some yelling.
Oh,
and I turned. And just as I turned, I saw, like, a little orange ball roll past me and a man, a kid running. It was like a kid. He was probably like a young teenager running.
So it was going downhill.
And he was yelling,
guessing.
And I think he was yelling at me
to,
like, to stop
get the ball.
The ball.
Mm-hmm.
But the ball was going by so fast. It was, like, a steep hill. So
yes.
It was, like, going by
very
way too
fast.
I was like, I'm going to have to, like, start sprinting to catch this kid's ball.
Right.
So I was like, oh, no, I'm not. There's no way I'm going to catch that ball. So I'm watching, and then I turn and look at the kid, like, I can't get it. Mm. And then he just gave up. He just was like, fuck it. And he just turned around and started walking back up the hill, right?
Okay.
And I'm watching this little orange ball roll down the hill. Meanwhile, in our China car, oh,
the police
coming up the hill.
Oh,
right?
My gosh. Okay.
The little ball is going like into the gutter and then coming back out into the street and then back into the gutter. And then it just like perfectly lined up with the tire.
Oh, what?
The car. And the car went right over it.
Uh-huh.
And it splatted. And it was an orange. The kid lost his orange. It was like his breakfast.
A real orange. Oh, because
wow. It was like really early morning. So he probably brought the orange to have for breakfast or merienda. No, not merienda. What's the market? What's the early morning break food?
Something
market
taco.
Taco or
amaketako.
Amaketako.
Yes. It's a perfect.
That's like the early morning. That's like you have breakfast and then you have, that's your break.
Yes.
Between lunch and breakfast. Yeah.
This is actually one of my favorite.
So that was the crap. The cops ran over the kid's fucking bright snack.
Or
they didn't mean to. Obviously.
Or the crime was that he lost his breakfast.
Yeah, I felt so bad for him. I was like, oh man, I didn't realize it was food. I thought it was a ball.
Yes,
and I was like,
you still wouldn't.
Oh, he lost his snack. He probably just grabbed that like last minute, leaving the house. Like, oh, I need something and. Because he did look kind of desperate, like,
yeah, poor kids. No vitamin C. I hope he didn't have a cold.
He'll be fine. I mean, he didn't die, obviously, but that's the mini crime time.
But I love the word amaiketako because...
Amaiketako. Amaiketako.
Amaika is, I think it's 11. So amaiketako, like it's amaiketako. The one of 11, which in English is...
Oh.
11sies!
Aww.
Isn't it the best snack ever?
11sies.
They actually have 11sies in the Basque Country, so...
Damn, that is cute.
And a story. The cutest fucking animal possible.
What a great mini prime time then.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And now we know a lot word in Basque that is so, so cute.
It is super cute.
It is.
And that poor kid didn't get his...
It's orange. He didn't. We will. Lots of love.
Thank you for listening to us. Please, if you like the podcast, tell your friends or write a review or rate us.
Yeah. Say hi.
And send us a goddamn email at crimesofthebasklands@gmail.com.
Because Julie's hurting. She wants to make.
I would just like one email.
Yeah.
Like that would make my motherfucking day.
So come on, guys.
Write an email. Just say hi, anything.
Yeah, because...
I'd just be stoked to get one.
Not to put too much responsibility on you, but it would be very, very, very sweet if you did say hi.
No, I am putting a lot of responsibility on you.
I'm not. But I love everybody anyway.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. Anyway, we love you, and thank you for listening, and we bid you
agur.
Crimes of the Basque Lands is written and produced by
Douglas D. Carvalho,
Julie Garcia,
and Megan Dooley.
The sound and editing for each episode by
Douglas D. Carvalho,
and Megan Dooley.
Theme song written by
Douglas D. Carvalho,
Julie Garcia,
and Megan Dooley.
Sung by the choir with no name and produced by Tom Squires. Podcast art by Distinct Signal. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Crimes of the Basque Lands and contact us at crimesofthebasklands@gmail.com with story ideas worldwide which have a connection to the Basque Country or any rave reviews. If you like our podcast, please subscribe, like, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time,
agur!